after a strenuous day's work, turned in 10 o'clock. March 13th, Monday. Turned out 7 o'clock. Carried on much the same as yesterday, bringing in seal blubber and meat. Preparing for departure tomorrow. Hope everyone will be all right. Made new dog harness and prepared sledges. In the afternoon, cooked sufficient seal meat for our journey out and back, and same for dogs. Turned in 10 o'clock, feeling much better. March 14th, Tuesday, a beautiful day, underway after lunch. One would think, looking at our party, that we were the most ragged lot one could meet in a day's march. All our clothes past mending, our faces black as niggers, a sort of crowd one would run away from. Going pretty good. As soon as we rounded Cape Armitage, a dead headwind with a temperature of minus 18 degrees Fahrenheit, so we are not in for a pleasant time. Arrived at safety camp 6 o'clock, turned in 8:30 after getting everything ready. March 15th, Wednesday. Underway as usual. Nice, calm day. Had a very cold night, temperature going down to minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit. Going along at a rattling good rate. In spite of our swollen limbs, we did about 15 miles. Very cold when we camped. Temperature minus 20 degrees Fahrenheit. Turned in 9 o'clock. March 16th, Thursday. Up before the sun, 4:45 a.m. Had a very cold night, not much sleep. Underway early, going good. Passed Smith's Grave, 10:45 a.m., and had lunch at depot. Saw Skipper's camp just after, and, looking through glass, found him outside tent, much to the joy of all hands, as we expected him to be down. Picked him up 4:15 p.m. Broke the news of Smith's death and no ship. I gave him the date of the 17th to look out for our returning, so he had a surprise. We struck his camp and went north for about a mile and camped. We gave the skipper a banquet of seal, vegetables, and blackcurrant jam, the feed of his life. He seems in a bad way. I hope to get him in 3 days, and I think fresh food will improve him. We turned in 8 o'clock. Distance done during day, 16 miles. March 17th, Friday. Up at 5 o'clock. Underway 8 a.m. Skipper feeling much better after feeding him up. Lunched a few yards past Smith's grave. Had a good afternoon, going fair. Distance about 16 miles. Very cold night. Temperature minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit. What with wet bags and clothes, rotten. March 18th, Saturday. Turned out 5 o'clock. Had rather a cold night. Temperature minus 29 degrees Fahrenheit. Surface very good. The skipper walked for a little way, which did him good. Lunched as usual, pace good. After lunch going good, arrived at safety camp 4:10 p.m. To our delight, found the sea ice in the same condition and arrived at Hut Point at 7 o'clock. Found Hayward still about same. Set to, made a good dinner, and all hands seem in the best spirits. Now we have arrived and got the party in, it remains to themselves to get better. Plenty of exercise and fresh food ought to do miracles. We have been out 160 days and done a distance of 1,561 miles, a good record. I think the irony of fate was poor Smith going under a day before we got in. I think we shall all soon be well. Turned in 10:30 p.m. Before turning in, Skipper shook us by the hand with great emotion, thanking us for saving his life. Richards, summarizing the work of the parties, says that the journeys made between September 1st and March 18th, a period of 160 days, totaled 1,561 miles. The main journey from Hut Point to Mount Hope and return was 830 miles. The equipment, he adds, was old at the commencement of the season, and this told severely at the later stages of the journey. 3 Primus lamps gave out on the journeys, and the old tent brought back by one of the last parties showed rents several feet in length. This hampered the travelling in the long blizzards. Finniscoya were also in pieces at the end, and time had frequently to be lost through repairs to clothing becoming imperative. This account would not be complete without some mention of the unselfish service rendered by Wilde to his 2 ill tentmates. From the time he remained behind at the long blizzard till the death of Spencer Smith, he had 2 helpless men to attend to, and despite his own condition, he was ever ready, night or day, to minister to their wants. This, in a temperature of minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit at times, was no light task. Without the aid of 4 faithful friends, Oscar, Con, Gunner, and Towser, the party could never have arrived back. These dogs, from November 5th, accompanied the sledging parties, and although the pace was often very slow, they adapted themselves well to it. Their endurance was fine. For 3 whole days at one time they had not a scrap of food, and this after a period on short rations. Though they were feeble towards the end of the trip, their condition usually was good, and those who returned with them will ever remember the remarkable service they rendered. The first indication of anything wrong with the general health of the party occurred about latitude 82 degrees 30 minutes south, when Spencer Smith complained of stiffness in the legs and discoloration. He attributed this to holes in his windproof clothing. At latitude 83 degrees south, when he gave way, it was thought that the rest would do him good. About the end of January, Captain McIntosh showed very serious signs of lameness. At this time, his party had been absent from Hut Point, and consequently from fresh food, about 3 months. On the journey back, Spencer Smith gradually became weaker, and for some time before the end was in a very weak condition indeed. Captain McIntosh, by great efforts, managed to keep his feet until the long blizzard was encountered. Here it was that Hayward was first found to be affected with the scurvy, his knees being stiff. In his case, the disease took him off his feet very suddenly, apparently causing the muscles of his legs to contract until they could be straightened hardly more than a right angle. He had slight touches in the joints of the arms. In the cases of Joyce, Wilde, and Richards, joints became stiff and black in the rear, but general weakness was the worst symptom experienced. Captain McIntosh's legs looked the worst in the party. The 5 men who were now at Hut Point found quickly that some of the winter months must be spent there. They had no news of the ship, and were justified in assuming that she had not returned to the Sound, since if she had, some message would have been awaiting them at Hut Point, if not farther south. The sea ice had broken and gone north within a mile of the point, and the party must wait until the new ice became firm as far as Cape Evans. Plenty of seal meat was available, as well as dried vegetables, and the fresh food improved the condition of the patients very rapidly. Richards massaged the swollen joints and found that this treatment helped a good deal. Before the end of March, McIntosh and Hayward, the worst sufferers, were able to take exercise. By the 2nd week of April, McIntosh was free of pain, although the backs of his legs were still discolored. A tally of the stores at the hut showed that on a reasonable allowance the supply would last till the middle of June. Richards and Wilde killed many seals so that there was no scarcity of meat and blubber. A few penguins were also secured. The sole means of cooking food and heating the hut was an improvised stove of brick covered with 2 sheets of iron. This had been used by the former expedition. The stove emitted dense smoke and often made the hut very uncomfortable, while at the same time it covered the men and all their gear with clinging and penetrating soot. Cleanliness was out of the question, and this increased the desire of the men to get across to Cape Evans. During April the sea froze in calm weather, but winds took the ice out again. On April 23rd, Joyce walked 4 miles to the north, partly on young ice 2 inches thick, and he thought then that the party might be able to reach Cape Evans within a few days. But a prolonged blizzard took the ice out right up to the point, so that the open water extended at the end of April right up to the foot of Viney's Hill. Then came a spell of calm weather, and during the 1st week of May the sea ice formed rapidly. The men made several short trips over it to the north. The sun had disappeared below the horizon in the middle of April and would not appear again for over 4 months. The disaster that followed is described by both Richards and Joyce. "And now a most regrettable incident occurred," wrote Richards. On the morning of May 8th, before breakfast, Captain McIntosh asked Joyce what he thought of his going to Cape Evans with Hayward. Captain McIntosh considered the ice quite safe, and the fine morning no doubt tempted him to exchange the quarters at the hut for the greater comfort and better food at Cape Evans. McIntosh naturally would be anxious to know if the men at Cape Evans were well and had any news of the ship. He was strongly urged at the time not to take the risk, as it was pointed out that the ice, although firm, was very young, and that a blizzard was almost sure to take part of it out to sea. However, at about 1 p.m., with the weather apparently changing for the worse, McIntosh and Hayward left, after promising to turn back if the weather grew worse. The last sight the watching party on the hill gained of them was when they were about 1 mile away, close to the shore, but apparently making straight for Cape Evans. At 3 p.m., a moderate blizzard was raging, which later increased in fury, and the party in the hut had many misgivings for the safety of the absent men. On May 10th, the first day possible, the three men left behind walked over new ice to the north to try and discover some trace as to the fate of the others.